This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Madden. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
We welcome in to this week's podcast. 2 weeks in a row of Fox Sports 1 guests. This time, NFL insider, writer, reporter, draft guru, podcast host, sideline reporter, and everything in between at Fox Sports. The one and only Peter Schrager. Peter, welcome.
Matt, thank you, buddy. I had you on my podcast probably mid-season of the NFL. I got a lot of good feedback, and I was just wondering when the favor would be returned, and it was like I was waiting for the dance, the invitation to the prom here, but you texted me, said, love to have you on the podcast, and I'm honored to be here, my man.
I'm sure it was the lowest rated version of the podcast that you've had. That shocks me. That really does. I appreciate that. Did I miss anything in there, Peter, in any of those Fox Sports? I mean, you're not analyzing like basketball or reporting with Ken Rosenthal.
No, last year, you know, it was like July or June, and we came together with an idea. My producer, Bernie Kim, out in L.A., he and I pitched an idea to our bosses in our first year at Fox Sports 1. We said, look, we don't have the rights to the World Cup. We have the UEFA Champions League. There's a soccer audience. I live in New York. I got nothing going on this week. And we decided, the two of us, to go to a different sports bar for a different country each day during the World Cup of the first week of it. So we did that. It was a pub crawl. That was basically the most, the extensive non-football stuff. The hilarious part was we did all these great hits, and it was fun. We had the flavor and everything. And then Katie Nolan did one from a German bar and got kissed on the cheek, and I think that made Twitter crazy, and that went nuts and went viral. So, hey, the idea was there, and Katie took it and ran, and it was a fun thing for all of us.
Not that she's done anything that's gone viral on Twitter. Speaking of Katie Nolan, tell me, who deserves the most blame for blowing the lid off her new show? You, Onright, or O'Toole from that podcast?
Yeah, first of all, we loved that. Okay, Katie was not happy with us. Fox PR probably wasn't thrilled, but we loved that you, or whoever at Awful Announcing, one of you guys, the Mount Rushmore of Awful Announcing, one of you guys was listening to the Jay and Dan podcast when, pretty casually, they dropped that, oh yeah, Katie Nolan has a new show, it's called Garbage Time, and it premieres in March. None of that was public. I kind of bit my lip because I was the guest in studio, and I'm like, guys, I don't think that's supposed to be out there, but they're Canadian, they're not that smart, they don't know things like that, there's no nuance with them, and they were excited about the show, and I think everyone had to quickly scramble to get stuff together, and the truth of the matter is, I think that's the best way Katie's show should have been announced. On the Jay and Dan podcast, fellow Fox Sports 1 guys, and she had a good time with it. We all had a good time with it, and here we are, a couple days away. Katie Nolan, I think, is the youngest female to ever be the solo host of a sports show on a sports network. I really do, and I think she deserves everything she's getting, and I'm super excited for it, because I think it's going to be wonderful.
Let's be honest now, that was some sort of guerrilla marketing thing. That wasn't just casually dropped out of nowhere.
That was planted by our bosses. So mention it this way, and they had seven different new media people in the room saying, if you do it this way, it'll go viral, and that's the most organic way to get traction. No, it was just Jay and Dan having big mouths.
I was going to say, you guys would be learning if that was the case. All right, I know you're at Oregon's Pro Day today. How did Marcus Mariota look?
Marcus Mariota looked very good. I think the question, Matt, was how is he going to look 2 weeks after the combine doing things under center? So he's a spread quarterback. There's a lot of been made about that. He's out of the shotgun on basically every snap he took at Oregon. In the NFL, that's not going to fly. So today, threw about 60 passes. Each one of them were either a three-step, five-step, or seven-step drop. And he looked great. He looked great. There was a couple drops, but I would say those are more on the receivers than the quarterback. And you could tell that Kevin O'Connell, who is now the Browns quarterback's coach, has worked very hard with Marcus on getting it right. Now, I say all this, and I talked to an NFL GM who is on site, and he and I have a good relationship, and I said, wow, you know, Marcus is pretty good. And he looked at me and said, if you don't look good on your pro day, you've got a lot of problems. So it was basically, he had to look good. He did look good. This wasn't a Teddy Bridgewater situation where it was an abysmal performance, and everyone walked away saying, well, what do we make of this guy? If you want to talk NFL-related stuff, though, I mean, you know, I'd say almost a triangle. You had the Jets brass, which was GM Mike McCagan and their offensive coordinators, Chan Gailey, and their quarterback coach, Kevin Petullo, in one section. You had nine different members of the Tennessee Titans staff that got the number two selection, including Ken Whisenhunt and Russell Webster, who is their GM. They were right there. And then you had the Tampa Bay contingent with Jason White, their GM, and John Robinson, their head of pro personnel, and then their quarterback coach, Mike Bajakian, all there in about a 10-foot radius watching every snap. So I think those three teams are the ones I would key in right now. And if he falls out of that top six, well, it's anybody's story, but I don't think he will. I think he's going to either go to Tampa, which is slim, Tennessee, which I think is likely, and then the Jets sitting at six. They're going to have to make a real decision if he falls all the way there.
So where do you have him going right now, and what is the probability, Peter, you think that we will see Chip Kelly pull a Mike Ditka-like deal and give up one or two or three or four draft classes or however many picks he can give up to trade up to get his guy, Marcus Mariota?
Matt, you asked this question, and I hear such a hint of anger and hostility, and I know you're a Saints fan, and I know when you ask that Ricky Williams question, the first thing that you think of is Ricky Williams in that wedding dress on that ESPN The Magazine cover, and that's what you're having bad flashbacks. I don't think it's going to happen again. I don't think we're getting a Robert Griffin situation. I truly feel, speaking with guys at the Eagles, that they are excited about not only Sam Bradford, but Mark Sanchez as well. They're excited with what they got. Look, Bradford runs an offense when healthy. Now, that's a big question mark. But at Oklahoma, and even when he was playing well for St. Louis, runs an offense that will suit this Chip Kelly scheme very well. I mean, he was a first overall pick of the NFL draft. His arm strength didn't go away. And now they believe with that backfield, they can run some of the stuff that Chip ran at Oregon and do even more, if not more high-powered than they had it here up in Eugene. I mean, everyone in that organization is excited with the haul that they brought in. And I spoke with Mark Helfrich, who's the Oregon head coach. Spoke with him saying, I said, you know, you worked with Chip Kelly for 4 years. You were an assistant under him. What the heck do you take of what's going on with Philly? And he looked at me and said, Chip Kelly has a plan. Trust me, Chip Kelly has a plan. And I guess I got to let that plan play out, right? So I don't think Mariota's going to end up in Philadelphia. I think they're happy with Sam Bradford as the starter, and most likely Mark Sanchez being the number two, Matt Barkley the number three. So it's fun to hypothesize about. I'm sure this isn't the last time we'll answer it. And who knows? I could be proven wrong. But I'm pretty sure that Marcus Mariota's going to go to a different place than Philadelphia.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that Ricky Williams, Mike Ditka thing. I have the ESPN Magazine cover of Ricky Williams in the wedding dress right next to the Times-Picayune front page from when the Saints won the Super Bowl. Just to keep in mind, you know, the highs and the lows of fandom.
It's humble.
It does. Yeah. You know, you take the good with the bad.
For the Saints fan, I think this week kept you humble also.
We'll get to that in a little bit. First, I want to finish up with the Eagles and Chip Kelly. You mentioned this idea that Chip Kelly has a plan, and I'm curious about that because we've seen the drama play out. And you know, let's move aside the Stephen A. Smith stuff because I think that's kind of proven to be maybe a nonsensical argument from him that was put forward on First Take. But if you look purely at the football moves. Acquiring Sam Bradford, going through the running back situation with Frank Gore and Ryan Matthews and now DeMarco Murray all of a sudden, we've ping-ponged back and forth between Chip Kelly is going to be out of the NFL by October and Chip Kelly once again is showing that he's a genius. So I think it's kind of interesting that you mentioned this idea that he has a plan, yet we've seen him and the Eagles seemingly go all these different directions. So is it a misdirection play? Is Murray and Bradford, is that the combo he's been after all along? Just what is this plan? Does anybody know what he's doing in Philly?
I don't think he thought realistically, and this goes across the board with the Philadelphia front office, that they can get DeMarco Murray for the amount of money they got. I know today people on Twitter, when he signed, were like, whoa, that's too much for DeMarco Murray, which is a crazy thought. DeMarco Murray led the league in rushing last year. They're going to end up paying him top five running back money, something the Cowboys just weren't able to do. It wasn't the Cowboys didn't want to do that. They weren't able to do that with what Romo's making, with what Tyron Smith is making, and most importantly, what they want to end up paying Dez Bryant. So there wasn't that money available. Now, don't get it twisted. The Cowboys wanted DeMarco Murray back. DeMarco Murray probably would have loved to have come back to the Dallas Cowboys. So when they weren't able to hit that top five running back money marker, and then now you got Oakland and Jacksonville, that's when the Eagles looked at in that front office. I mean, and I'm talking to people who are around that Philly team saying, you know, and it's kind of like, all right, let's go for it. So was Frank Gore not signing with them a big step back? They were upset. Of course they were. What do you want? It was announced. Everything thought it was happening. But you tell me, is DeMarco Murray an upgrade from Frank Gore for what you're paying him? Then you bring in Ryan Matthews and also have Chris Polk and also have Darren Sproles. There are weapons everywhere in that backfield. So when I say that Chip Kelly has a plan, I will just say this. The same writers and the same fans that go gaga over analytics and go gaga over the fact that Chip Kelly has sleep monitors and Chip Kelly brings in Navy SEALs and Chip Kelly's weekly schedule is different than any other team because they practice on Mondays and they practice on Saturdays and other teams don't. The same writers and the same media and the same fans that think that's so innovative and so cool are the same ones saying that Chip Kelly's out of his mind.
No. No.
Chip Kelly is the one who's now kind of working with player personnel. First year that he's really had that responsibility, working alongside Howie Roseman and working alongside Ed Manowitz and all those different guys in that front office. But for the same people that are always praising Chip Kelly for being unorthodox and being so innovative, maybe you take a deep breath and say, hey, look, it hasn't worked for the Eagles their entire history as a franchise. They never won a Super Bowl. Maybe we be patient and see what Chip Kelly's going to do as far as bringing innovation to some front office decisions. I think it's a very interesting week, and I don't think Super Bowls are won on March 11th, 12th, and 13th.
I find it very hard to believe, Peter, that fans, football fans, and Philly football fans especially, would be fickle like that. Find that very hard to believe.
It's funny because you get a, you know, I don't even know who would write, but you get like 5,000 word think pieces every offseason about what Chip Kelly's doing that's so different, and everyone does flips over, you know, oh, he looks at analytics. Well, why does that not apply to the way he's building his team? Is it just because we're in such a place where anything like that is just something that we can write? I mean, to me, it's all innovation, and it's all unorthodox, and it's all stuff that he's trying to flip the NFL on its head. And guess what? That's why Jeff Lurie's paying so much money to bring him in, because he is different and he's not going to bring the same thing that we've always had. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be fun, different. And the fact that Chip Kelly is such an enigmatic guy that no one can really wrap their head around, it's good for football.
Part of the reason why we want to have you on, Peter, is you have been chasing this DeMarco Murray situation throughout the last couple of days. Now, we know just how big this business of being an NFL insider has gotten over the last few years. And you strike me, Peter, as one of those guys that's kind of starting to transition into reporting, including all the different hats you wear at Fox, what you've done in the past, you're writing books with GQ, Esquire, other places like that. But now kind of transitioning into this idea of being a reporter and insider and chasing scoops and breaking stories. How tough is it to break into this world of NFL reporting when you have the Schefters and the Glazers and the like that you're competing with?
Jay Glazer and Adam Schefter are in a league all of their own, and they are so good at what they do that it can be so intimidating to even try to dip your foot in the waters. And I'm going to throw in, you know, the Ian Rappaports, the Adam Kaplan, Mike Garofalo at Fox is awesome at this stuff. And these guys, they are so incredibly relentless with the way they chase information, the way they build relationships. For me, I've had the luxury at Fox to be able to break some things here and there, but for the most part, they have me as more of an on-the-scene reporter, an Ed Werder type, if you will, a Bob Holtzman. You know, once someone is on the scene, I'm going to tell you during pregame who's inactive, who's not active. I'm going to do some good feature stories that I love telling. And, you know, I love what I do. It's unbelievable. This offseason, I made a mandate to myself, and Mike Garofalo and Glazer and I will talk at the combine, and I got to pick it up. I got to bring something more to the table. I got to add some value. So I was happy I could do that. But when I tell you, on a Saturday night, when I text with Garofalo, who's, I mean, I just think is such a great friend and also a great worker on this stuff, when I text with him and know what he's trying to get, because his mandate for him on the FS1 pregame show is to break maybe, you know, one or two stories that Schefter doesn't have, that Rappaport doesn't have, that Mort and Werder don't have. And it's relationship building, man, and it's really hard. And it's guys who are agents, it's guys at the teams, And I've made a real mandate to get better at that. And I'm glad that I was able to break some stuff, but I'm still so far away. And it's ironic that you even mentioned, you know, Glazer and Schefter, because here I was like, all right, I'm going to do my best to get, you know, as much on the DeMarco Murray situation. And I really felt pretty good with that, with the sources that I was building and all that stuff. And that's great. And then the free agency starts and, you know, Glazer just drops a bomb that Jimmy Graham's been traded. And then a second later, Schefter's breaking that, you know, Sam Bradford's been traded. So as much as I feel pretty good and I want to pat myself on the back for a couple of good, you know, scoops here and there, it's an uphill battle with those guys, and I'm just in awe of watching them work.
So is the goal then to get to that level? Or
not for me. I love doing the sidelines. I got to do a few sideline games. This year for Fox, they were cool enough to, when there was the baseball playoffs, there was an opportunity. Then when Fox had a doubleheader, I got to work with Sam Rosen and Kirk Morrison. We did a bunch of games down the stretch, and that to me is the dream. I love being on the field. I love being in the action. I love to offer things to the fans that maybe they're not getting otherwise. So I know that I don't appear to look like a typical sideline reporter, and I think that's an interesting angle for me to say I'd like to go forth with, but I do think there's a place on the broadcast for maybe a little bit of a front office look during the games, and when we talk stuff like salary cap, and we talk stuff about what these guys are looking to do in the offseason, and also how they train and all that stuff. So I just love telling the stories. I love following the players, and I love working with the NFL and being a part of it. So do I want to be Adam Schefter or Jay Glazer? Of course, that would be the dream. But I also want to carve my own niche out, and I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. Just got to keep on building.
I know you'd always rather be right than be first, and plenty of outlets have certainly fallen into that trap before. But with this free agency frenzy, with all the stories that are broken, all the competition that's out there for scoops, is the pressure real for you to go out and get more stories this offseason, to break more news? And obviously, you know, I'm not talking about the times when, by and large, you see maybe the same quote-unquote league source feed the same info to seven different reporters, and whoever gets it first is the guy who can text on their iPhone or their BlackBerry the fastest. I mean, real honest-to-goodness scoops. Is the pressure, Peter, real to chase those stories, publish that information, and be out front? Just how much does it weigh on an NFL reporter inside that world? Because I'm not sure that those of us who are outside of it can imagine just the 24/7 crush that is on you guys to try and get news out there, given the thirst that exists for any modicum of NFL information.
Matt, I think I love that question, and I think you have to realize we're as competitive in our industry as any industry there is, whether there's athletes, whether it's lawyers, whether it's finance guys, we're all competitive. And there's always going to be a first, right? So we're all chasing the same stuff. I'll give you an example. I think it was week 16. Fox Sports 1 sent me to Pittsburgh Steelers, Atlanta Falcons down in Atlanta. You'd think, okay, whatever, Steelers are going to make a playoff, Falcons are in a race, it's good. But the question was, is Julio Jones going to play, right? I mean, and that's just, who's that for? Just our fantasy owners, who's it for? Who cares? Fox is sending me. They're paying me to be at that game. And I have a hit at 11:21 in the morning, and I'm going to be on the Fox Sports 1 pregame show, the Fox NFL kickoff show, and they're going to ask me, is Julio Jones playing today? And guess what? The inactives don't come out till 11:30, so I've got to have that info. And I've got Jeff Darlington from NFL Network next to me. I'm sure I had someone at ESPN. I forget who else was there. And there's also a local beat guy, so we're all chasing this one piece of information. Well, I was happy. I got it. It doesn't matter how I got it. At about 11:19, I go on air, and I'm able to say, with definitive nature, Julio Jones is not going to play today. He's inactive. Okay, fine. That happens. The game happens. No one ever thinks about that again. I didn't sleep the night before, Matt, because I was so concerned I had to get that info. Now, times that by three, and the chase times that by three, that's free agency. So, yes, is there pressure? Of course, but it's mostly internal. It's competitive. And I'll give you an example. This week, Lamar Woodley was released by the Raiders, and I had him signing first with the Arizona Cardinals. Lamar Woodley. This isn't Tom Brady. This isn't Lamar Woodley in his prime. It's Lamar Woodley signing a one-year deal with the Steelers. I send it in. You know, it gets a Ian Rappaport retweets it. I think someone else, I think Josina, retweets it. And boom, there's 1,000 retweets on Lamar Woodley has signed a one-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. And the next day was Issa Abdul-Kaddous a safety for the Detroit Lions. I was first to the table with that. Boom, the Detroit beat writers report that. There's 1,000 retweets. Now, I know, this is whatever. This is fake currency. It might as well be Bitcoin, Twitter followers, whatever it is. That said, it's a rush, man, and it's a job. So, you know, you want to be the one. You always want to be the one, but you can't be wrong. And that's the key. You can't be wrong. So if I sacrifice being the first one to say that, you know, last night DeMarco Murray is on a plane, right, is traveling to Philadelphia, it's because I couldn't lock it up 100%. I didn't want to be wrong, and I don't have the intellectual wealth online and amongst the community to get that wrong. I have to be right every single time I tweet anything that's big, and I'm the first one there. So it weighs heavy on me. And I know I'm talking a lot about it, and it's kind of like an inside baseball look, but, like, you know, Josina Anderson, I mean, she was breaking stuff left and right this week, and, you know, it's a grind, man. It's impressive. And I think, you know, everyone just says, oh, okay, whatever, that's their jobs. But whatever Josina, or whatever I, or whatever Garofolo or Mortensen breaks, is something that Glazer didn't, Schefter didn't, and Rappaport didn't. So it's a constant chase, and we're all competitive, so it's pretty fun.
I think the inside baseball stuff on this particularly just fascinates me because of the growth, because of the demand, because of the competition. You mentioned that pressure. I just don't think it's anything any of us outside that world could truly appreciate. I mean, the pressure that goes into reporting something that on the surface is seemingly so minor as Issa Abdul-Kaddous, former Saints player, by the way, re-signing with Detroit. But, I mean, that's a big deal to get that right for you, to get that out there first and to put your name and your hat in the ring.
Exactly. I said, I'm going to hit a bunch of singles, and hopefully I'll get a couple home runs. And just being involved in the Murray stuff was good. That was good for me. But those little singles, Kaddous, and then this morning I broke Henry Melton signing with the Buccaneers. Again, you know, little minor things. No one tomorrow is going to wake up and say, wow, Peter Schrager broke Henry Melton to the Buccaneers.
There might be someone, Peter. There might be one person.
There might be someone. But all of it helps, and all of it is a combination of weeks and weeks of work with relationships, with sources, and with whatever else. And the fascinating thing is, Matt, about all this, and there's guys I'm forgetting. I mean, Lachlan Ford is great. Mike Florio's a machine. I mean, all these guys, whoever I left out in this conversation, Adam in. I mean, Peter King, all these guys, fine, whatever. But everyone does it differently, which is so fascinating. I mean, Glazer goes about his work so much differently than Adam Schefter, but there's a mutual respect between the two, and it's a completely, wild, wild west with how you want to go about it and how you cultivate relationships. And I'm still trying to figure out all that, navigating those waters myself. So it's all about forging your own road, making your own relationships, and then just hoping that you're right when you get these things. And so far, I've been pretty accurate. I just, you know, I don't want to jinx myself. Sometimes these things go awry.
And you probably picked up 7 parody Henry Melton Twitter accounts today as new followers.
So many.
I can imagine.
When was the last time Issa Abdul-Kaddous and Henry Melton were mentioned on your website?
This is the first, I think. All right, you've written books, been at Fox, all these different players. Is this the toughest job you think you've had? Chasing down these free agent scoops, is it the toughest, most demanding thing that you've done?
No, I love this. This is fun. This is exciting. This is where it all comes together. And, like, I'm at a Oregon Pro Day. I haven't left the hotel room. The only time I have was to go to the pro day and come back because I need to be, you know, hooked in and on the web and all this stuff. It's fun. This is all fun. There is no hard, real part about the job. The difficult part is where, you know, with your personal life, with the traveling, that's all it is, where you're constantly on the road. But trust me, I never for a second, and anyone who knows me, either on the NFL beat, I've got a lot of friends, we all cover this together, and even at Fox, everyone says that I'm, like, you know, a little too eager and energetic about what I'm doing, and it's going to sink in eventually that there are some negatives to this stuff. But for me, man, I love it. It's absolutely thrilling. And you know, I mentioned the Twitter followers. I feel like I'm a little sarcastic on Twitter sometimes with some of the things I say. But you'll never find me complaining about travel on Twitter. You'll never find me complaining about my job on Twitter because I absolutely love it.
Hopefully you found a good Olive Garden out there in Oregon, too.
So you know. See, Matt Yoder knows that I'm obsessed with Olive Garden and Applebee's. And anyone who's watched my waist size expand over the course of an NFL season probably can tell that as well.
See, I'm more of a Chili's guy myself, but I'm not going to hate on a man who loves his Olive Garden.
Where do you get a Chili's? There's an excellent mesquite chicken dish I like there. Is that the Monterey chicken? I like that dish. Is that what you go with?
See, I usually go the boneless chicken wings, the chicken sandwich. You know, you might dive into the chicken crispers every now and then, or
if I'm
feeling particularly guilty about myself, maybe a salad.
Okay, the salads are good. They have a nice little starter salad there. There's shredded cheese. I know it. It's good.
I feel like we could spend a whole podcast talking about chain restaurants.
I think there should be a podcast dedicated to chain restaurants.
You know, I think Peter, some kind of Anthony Bourdain-like travel show would make a nice compliment to Garbage Time with Katie Nolan. I can see it right now, Sunday night hour-long block.
We need that Guy Fieri's little brother, like Steve Fieri, and that's what he does.
You know what we need? And I don't know how I do this, because Guy Fieri, you know, is what he is. But Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives is such a great show, regardless of how insufferable or how great you think Guy Fieri is. So I feel like maybe there's a sports bar equivalent of that you could do for Fox. You mentioned the World Cup thing. Here we are, programming ideas.
This is your big news. You know, you want to break Katie Nolan's heart. This is big news. I pitched something like that verbally, nothing real, nothing formal. I pitched it, I say, either me or someone else, we go on the road and we go to the best sports bars in the country, and then we have them somehow do some competition, like a 64-team competition where they, you know, compete in trivia contests, and it's the bartender, we do all the history of it. I think there's a market for that. I think they have to call it something catchy, and then I think when you're flipping by in the channel guide, it's either that or, you know, a seventh showing of First Take, I think you might watch it.
I think I've got to get on the horn to Eric Shanks to make this happen, Peter. All right, we'll stash that idea away for later, but let's get back to the free agency deals. You mentioned the Saints, obviously. I want to spend some time with them. Jimmy Graham going to Seattle. I'm still trying to come to grips with this. I've been racking my brain for days figuring out how this could happen. And Peter, this is the only thing that makes sense in my mind is that somehow this deal was done to send a message to the locker room, because when you're a team that comes into the season as a Super Bowl contender, when you go 7-9 in the worst division in football, when you have a 5-game losing streak at home, when you've won so many in a row under Sean Payton, when you get blown out by the Panthers, when you lose a heartbreaking game to the Falcons, when you lose early season games in the last possession to Atlanta again, to Cleveland on the road, when you go 7-9, something's not right. And it shocked me after the season, given how strong a bond and how strong the leadership is with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, for them to say that guys are missing flights, that guys are late to team meetings, that the leadership culture wasn't there in the locker room. Now, granted, you're losing Jonathan Vilma, Will Smith, Malcolm Jenkins, Roman Harper. I get that. But for there to be that big of a void was really startling. And I just wonder, Jimmy Graham coming off signing a new contract, bit of a contentious negotiation with the whole franchise tag. Is he a receiver? Is he a tight end? First preseason game against, penalized twice for dunking, and has a dust up with Peyton on the sidelines. I just wonder, is there something more behind the scenes that he had to go for this locker room to get stronger, even though from a football standpoint, you're giving up an all-world tight end for a late first-round draft pick and a pretty good center in Max Unger? What do you think about the move?
You know, you're not alone in that thinking. And quite personally, it was contentious trying to figure out that Jimmy Graham contract situation. They got it done. They got him the money. And he hurt his shoulder, and he wasn't what he was last year. And, you know, whether or not you could blame a guy for an injury or not, you can't. That's the size of it. Now, as far as the locker room leadership thing goes, I can't speak to that. I'm not following that team every day. You talk to Larry Holder or some of those guys, because they are the ones who can give you all that. I do know that ownership situation right now is as interesting one I've ever covered in sports with, you know, obviously Tom Benson is getting up there in age.
Interesting might be an understatement. I think it's like an episode of Dallas being played out in real life.
That's what it is.
Before us?
I don't think anyone's talking about it enough. It's crazy. So to give the listeners an idea, Tom Benson has a wife, his third wife, who has been around since 2004 with him. It's not like Anna Nicole Smith, like she's been in or anything. She's been there. But he's also got his daughter, and then his daughter's kids. There's two of them, and it was supposed to be his granddaughter taking over the team, and basically the granddaughter and the grandson, along with some other people in the Benson clan, have had a falling out with his wife, And now there's discussion as to who the team goes to. There's billions of dollars at stake here. And this is all going on in the background of a season where everything just, you know, hit the fan. They had no defensive backfield by the end of the season. They spent all this money on Jarius Byrd. He gets hurt. And then they're looking at each other saying, okay, what now? You look at a second-round pick and Stanley
Jean-Baptiste took a red shirt last year.
I think took eight snaps last year, second-round pick who you draft. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but then their season ends, and Rex and Rob Ryan is brought back. And Marcus Colston, they figure a way, despite his salary cap, to restructure the contract. And he comes back, and then Mark Ingram comes back, and you're thinking, okay, all right, maybe the Saints are getting the band back together, and there's been some sort of talk internally, let's make it happen. But you know what? They lost a guy named Ryan Pace this offseason, who was a very valued front office guy. And they lost a few other people on that staff. And now you have to wonder, like, what to make of this team, because as they're kicking out of Ben Grubbs, who is a great guy, and kicking out of Jimmy Graham, who I think is a wonderful guy, and if there's all these rumors, everyone else is on the block, everyone but Breeze is going to be traded tomorrow. At the same time, they're signing Brandon Browner. They're bringing in CJ Spiller for a visit. I'm pretty good info that Reggie Bush is going to end up either with one of three teams, and the Saints are one of those three teams. They're bringing people back. So I don't know where it stands right now. I don't think they're in rebuild mode, but I do know that Jimmy Graham contract situation was a tough one for a while there. They got it done. There weren't many results last year. Say the shoulders, say whatever. And they're now ready to move on and try to get that salary cap in order because, as you know, sir, their salary cap was as bad as any situation entering this offseason in the league. And now it's not as bad as it was, but you're losing maybe the top, if not top three, tight end in the league in the process.
Well, that's the thing. You're taking such a hit this year with Graham and dead cap space, and I get it. You know, Mickey Loomis can work his magic, sign some guys, move those numbers out into the future. And, you know, I've always maintained through this offseason, I think I was asked about this week. There's an article, I think Football Outsider said, you know what, it's not so crazy to think the Saints should trade Drew Brees, pull a 76ers, and just blow it up. And I'm thinking, no, that's insane. Then I've got, you know, you speak of how big this NFL insider has gone. I've got college football recruiting analysts from like South Carolina trying to give me heart attacks saying the Saints are open to trading Drew Brees. And I'm thinking, no, that's insane. Like, you can't do that. That's the one thing you can't do. Which is why this offseason has been so bizarre to me, because it seems like, aside from Drew Brees, pretty much everything is on the table for this team. And you're thinking, you know, bringing back Rob Ryan for another year, you have all this talent. You know, maybe you have a team that's not reading their own press clippings, and you're thinking there's enough here that you should be able to make a serious run. And as long as Drew Brees is your starting quarterback, your Super Bowl window is open. So maybe you go into this offseason, you know, fix the cap, plug some holes here and there, and then you make another run. But this, Peter, has seemed to be just a few steps short of, if not a rebuild, because you don't want to use that word, because obviously Brees is still there, but at least a complete overhaul or retooling of the roster.
And yet, you still have Brees.
Maybe that's the only thing that matters.
You still have Brandon Cooks. You still have some of those key defensive players. You still have a Kenny Vaccaro. You have a Jarius Byrd coming back. I don't think it's as drastic as everyone thinks. And I know it's easy to hit the panic button when a rumor comes out. And you know what? That Football Outsider stuff, it's fine, but it's all, it might as well be in the ether. It's all hypothetical. That's not using any information from what the Saints have told anyone. I mean, that's just, hey, here's a hypothetical. So to get worried about that would be, I think, the wrong decision. Although financially it might make sense. I don't know what Sam Hinkie's model has netted so far in Philadelphia, but I don't think the Saints are going to do that when you've got Sean Payton, who's won a Super Bowl, Rob Ryan making the money he makes, Mickey Loomis, who always wants to be competitive, and quite frankly, a Saints fan base that has escaped the doldrums. They've been through that. They don't want to go through that again. I think they'd rather go 6-10, 7-9, and have Drew Brees at quarterback than 2-14 and not have Drew Brees at quarterback. So I just don't think it's time to press the panic button there yet. And look, at all those rumors that Cameron Jordan was going to be traded and Kenny Stills was on the block. It might happen. I don't know, though. And if they don't, you start trading camp. And what were you last year? A 7-19 with Jimmy Graham. Can he be better without him? Yeah, he can be better without him. We'll see if he can go 8-9-7, and who knows, maybe win the division, because quite frankly, I'm not sure Carolina was all that good last year. So I would just preach patience, and I'm telling you, if Reggie Bush joins, you got another guy, you got a nice draft pick, things come together suddenly pretty quick, and you won't be moaning about Jimmy Graham come week 8, week 9.
I appreciate the calm assurance, but in spite of recent success, default reaction for most Saints fans is to look at the Ricky Williams picture and not the the Tracy Porter, Drew Brees picture.
You've got to look at that Times Picayune article. You've got to remember Hank Basket bobbling the onside kick. You have to remember these things.
Give me a few more years of that success, maybe one more title, then I could be an eternal optimist.
Of what's his name? Braden Breeze, the baby with the headset off, the confetti coming down. Just wake up to that.
Now I've got Drew Brees tweeting out pictures of his kid wearing a Jimmy Graham jersey, and I'm like in tears at the laptop, thinking, "Oh my God!" All right, enough of that, because I will break out into histrionics. Okay, best and worst value signings thus far in free agency.
Jerry Hughes to the Bills. They re-signed him very quietly. No one's really talking about it, but he was one of the best pass rushers in all of football. You're going to put him in a Rex Ryan defense now, where he's going to be set free even more. They've got a great defensive line. I think there's a quiet re-signing that no one really did anything about, because the same day LeSean McCoy was traded to them, and that was kind of the one that stole everything. But asking around with my sources in Buffalo, they were almost as thrilled, if not more thrilled, to get Jerry Hughes to come back. So that's not going to dazzle anybody, I don't think, but he's a guy that's a Pro Bowl caliber player who they got at a good price, $9 million a year just about, and he's going to rush the passer and work well there for years. I don't like bashing any free agent signings too badly, and in fact, I think the Ndamukong Suh thing is fine, and a lot of people kill that. If anything, I would question the Revis money, and I might rue the day for doing that. He might be the best corner for the next 10 years, but a 30-year-old cornerback who's had injury issues, and last year, quite frankly, except for the games against maybe the Bears when he was covering Brandon Marshall and maybe the Bengals against A.J. Green, it wasn't like he was shutting down Randy Moss in his prime last year. I don't think Revis had a great year. I think he had a very good year. He was a part of a very good defensive backfield on a very good defense. So to give a 30-year-old cornerback who's had injuries $40 million guaranteed, I don't know. I don't know if that's the best value. That said, you take in fan sentiment, and you take in a new coaching staff, and you take in all the different reasons why teams make big splashes in March. The Jets had to do it. They had to do it. They had to get that back page. They need to have something positive for fans to be banking on. And Brandon Marshall and Darrell Revis, I'm not sure if that's what gets them over the top or not, but at the very least, they're not the joke of the New York back pages this week.
All right, I want to end with Fox Sports 1. I know you keep up to date with the industry. You want to get into some of the network stuff here. So big picture, Peter, big picture. If you look at Fox Sports 1, your network, year and a half into it, what's the present state of Fox Sports 1? Are you guys as far along as you would like to be at this point in the game?
I think this question is far more suited for Eric Shanks or John Entsch or David Nathanson or Jacob Ullman or one of the executives in charge. But I'll say this, we're a year and a half in, and I think we're light years ahead of where we were a year and a half ago when we launched. I think the right pieces are in place. I think Fox Sports 5 is a nightly highlight show with Jay and Dan is significantly better than it was maybe even a year ago. I think it's a very enjoyable show. It's a nice alternative to SportsCenter, and Mike Hughes and those guys have done a great job beefing it up to that point. The live sports is what's going to make this channel even better, man. And I think Women's World Cup is going to be a great showcase. I think that's going to be awesome. I think the U.S. Open stuff is going to be tremendous. And I was really proud of the work we did during the NFL season, and I was really proud of the work that they did during the baseball playoffs. I thought people were like, where is Fox Sports 1? And can't even find it. And then, you got the ratings people coming out saying it's so far lower than TBS or whatever else you want to say. We were a network in our second year and put on a really good production with a lot of innovative different stuff with that Jabo broadcast. And, look, I'm ranting and raving about how great we are. There's still a long way to go. But I'm on the road now doing NFL stuff with Joel Klatt. And the two of us are going to the NFL Draft Pro Days. We're at the Combine. We're going to be covering draft. And I feel as good about our work that we've done as anyone at NFL Network, anybody at ESPN, and I feel that way watching the Big East tournament, and I feel that way watching anything on our network. I really feel proud of the work we're doing, and I think a year and a half in, to have everyone across the board be pretty energetic, pretty positive, and pretty proud of the work, it's saying a lot, you know? And I don't know the ratings. I don't do that stuff. I don't know the advertising dollars. That's not on me. I just know the content, and I watch America's pregame every day at 5 p.m. Eastern, and I'm proud of the product that's out there. And I watch Fox Sports Live, and I'm dying laughing at Jay and Dan, and I'm getting all the hockey highlights I'm not getting anywhere else. It's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. And I don't know if KD's show is going to be the best show ever or it's going to, you know, be a work in progress. Whatever it is, I'm proud of it taking the green light to put a female on television and give her own show on a sports network. I think that's pretty bold. So all in all, I think it's in a very good place, and I know my colleagues and I love working there, and we're trying our best to make a dent in the sports media landscape.
The bonus check is in the mail, Peter. That's all it I have is, to say. Man. The bonus it check is in the mail.
Can I take a deep breath now?
You can. All right, flip side of that, let me play devil's advocate here. As I've expressed to you, I think the main issue with Fox Sports 1 was the expectations game, because a lot of people associated with the network came out and said, you know, we're challenging ESPN, we want to topple the hierarchy, you know, we've done it in network television, we've done it in cable news, now we're going to do it in sports. And that happened, the network launched, and we haven't quite seen that challenge develop in full just yet. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. As you mentioned, I think, you know, we all kind of know now, seeing where the network has been in the first 18 months, that really you're not going to get viewers unless you have the live sports. That is what is going to bring people to your channel. That's what's going to gain awareness. That's when it's going to be what keeps audiences for studio shows. But I think if Fox Sports 1 had said, you know, from the outset, we're going to take this one day at a time, you know, we know it's a marathon, not a sprint, and kind of taken maybe the NBC sports network approach, you know, quietly chugging along doing their thing, I think the narrative would be a lot different about Fox Sports 1 right now, because you could point to the growth of Fox Sports Live. You could point to the Jabo telecasts with the NLCS. You can point to a lot of different things the network is doing. But because of that launch and because it was, hey, we're here to challenge ESPN, that's the benchmark right now. And obviously, that's going to take a lot of years to reach that benchmark. So I just wonder if the expectations were different, how different would the narrative be in the wider sports media landscape about Fox Sports 1 right now?
Hey, I don't know. I don't do the marketing. I don't do the promotion. I don't do any of that. I'd rather be with the company that takes a big swing at the bully than saying, hey, we're going to take our time and methodically go around and be the tortoise in the hare here. I love that we come out with a little brash attitude, and I'm so proud, you know, being on the road with Fox Sports or in the NFL. It's like, we are the big bad dogs. We're Fox Sports. We're in the Cowboys. Like, what do you want? Like, it's not in our nature to really take a back seat and nod politely to ESPN and say, oh, well, thank you, dear sir, can we please have another? Like, that's not it. So, you know, the narrative with you guys in the sports media landscape is that we came out too brash and we failed miserably, and oh my God, they had Gus Johnson try soccer. Like, it was such an affront to everybody. We're trying different things, man, and it's a little bit of a brash attitude, but I'm okay with that as long as we're trying to get better every day. And, you know, it's been a year and a half, and I still feel like the write-ups, whether it's you guys, everyone, it's the same stuff that was written since day one. I feel like it's changed, it's evolved. And I'm pretty proud of the content we have, and whether or not we're brash, not brash, came out swinging too hard, I don't control that. I mean, I certainly have no opinion on any of that stuff, but for anyone that I talk to that watches the network, and I'm not, again, I don't know the ratings, I don't know what number that means, but people that watch it say, hey, that was good stuff, or wow, Randy Moss is really good, or oh, you guys got Kevin Burkhart? I love Kevin Burkhart. Like, it's an alternative, man. It's an alternative to ESPN. And I grew up watching Stuart Scott and Steve Levy and all those guys, but Jay and Ben are pretty darn good, and they're pretty damn funny. So, brash, whatever. I'd rather be irreverent and brash than sitting in the corner waiting for it to come to us, because they won't. Gotta go for it.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Sports with Peter Schrager. That's the way to do it.
That's a long title. Matt, it's a long title. It's not me hosting. I think Scott Fieri is going to host it. You're going to have some bleach blonde tips, and we're going to go from there. But yeah, stuff like that. Maybe you need a show. I would think there should be a roundtable show of you, Jimmy Trania, And who else is, like, funny and good online with the sport? I think that a few of you guys could have a little show. I don't know if it's on Fox Sports 1, but if you guys could take the best of what you do at Awful Announcing and put it into a television show, I would watch that.
That would be the quickest way to ensure the demise of Fox Sports 1.
Oh, I said it's not going to be on our network. Hell no. Let me ask you this. So I grew up on Francesa, and I love Francesa, and I watched and listened to Francesa every day. You're in Columbus, Ohio. Is there just no connection for you? Is it just like I don't get it, or is it like you get it, it's just not New York sports? So, because to me, it's like there's no one I want to hear sports from 1 to 6 more than this guy. So when we brought him on, I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, Francesa's on our network, and I get the feelings from you guys, from some of the other sports media writers, that, like, it's not, like, somebody that's looked at positively. I think he's fantastic, and he's Francesa, man. Like, I love it.
No, look, when I was in high school, when I would get home from school, I would turn on the Yes Network to watch Mike and the Mad Dog. But Peter, I am a sports media nerd. I mean, I am just the biggest dork in the world when it comes to this stuff. So, of course, I'm going to turn on some random radio show from New York. So, you know, that might be great for me, but I just don't know if the normal population in Columbus, Ohio can really resonate and connect with Mike Francesa. I mean, I love the guy. I love the prank calls. Everything, you know, I wish Dog would come back. If Olbermann can go back to ESPN, I don't see why Mad Dog can't go back and work with Francesa. But I just...
Mike's moved on, and Mike's show right now, I feel the same way about Howard Stern. Jimmy and I talk about this all the time. Howard Stern is now working 3 days a week, and he only does 7 to 11, and every show is a grand slam. He's got Madonna as a guest, and it's all home runs. I feel like Mike Francesa right now, and forget Fox Sports 1, that's not where I watch. I usually listen to it on the radio at home. Mike Francesa right now is as good as he's ever been, and he's got now this, like, new self-deprecating side a little bit, where he understands that, like, the Mongos exist, and he goes to that Francesa con stuff. I think Mike's as good now as he's ever been, and I just love that there's just, like, second stage to his career, post-Mad Dog, and I think it might be better than when he was with Mad Dog.
How is he with your guy, Joel Klatt? I know there was some tension there. Maybe a little
draft is going to roll around again. So what happened there was, like, I know Francesa. Like, I get the deal. Joel's from Colorado, lives out in L.A., and is a college football nerd. Like, he doesn't listen to Mike Francesa talk about, you know, Raul Abana is on a Tuesday. That's not his thing. So when they had us on, you know, Joel's going to be talking about it, and Francesa was just taking shots at him. And Joel went with it, but you're right, it was that little awkward moment. This year's been passed. I've got to convince both sides, Francesa's producer and also Klatt, to bring it back one more time, and let's do it big again. And if Francesa is a little rude or maybe a little cold to Joel, I'll be there so he can cry on it.
You got to get Julie Stewart Banks in there as a peacemaker.
Yeah, no, Mike loves Julie. And I think Julie loves Mike. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Maybe that's the co-host.
Guys love Julie, and you should. She's a great girl. But man, Julie, everyone loves Julie Banks. Anyone I talk to, do you know Julie Banks? I'm like, yeah, I know Julie. She's great.
All right, so what we've done here, let's cover the ground. We've given Peter his own Anthony Bourdain, no reservation show. We've made Julie Stewart Banks Mike Francesa's new co-host. I mean, in the words of Olbermann, this isn't your day to run the network, but I feel like we've got some pretty good ideas here for Fox Sports 1.
Like, okay, the only thing missing was the whiteboard and like the room of 40 executives nodding and shaking their head and checking their BlackBerry. This is good.
Just send me the consultant's check whenever it arrives, Peter. Hopefully this will dispel the notion. Believe this, you know, there's some people, comments, Twitter, that think we're anti-Fox. And it's like...
All you guys are. You guys take these shots at us.
But we're taking shots at everyone, Peter. I mean, it's not... We just take shots at everyone equally.
I know. The site is called Awful Announcing. It's not like it's called, you know, the Pointer Institute. I get it.
This is true. You know, we've grown beyond that name in many ways, but in some ways there's... The sense of snark that will always remain at our core. All right, Peter, you've been a good sport. Let me get you out of here. Prediction. Tell me who my Saints are picking at number 13, and you can throw in number 32 in there if you'd like.
All right, 13. I like a guy named Randy Gregory out of Nebraska.
Ooh, that'd be a good pick.
He's a beast. He's a pass rusher. The issue is he might be a little too light for a traditional defense, so you put him in Rob Ryan's 3-4, you tell him, you're just going to be a pass rusher. Don't worry about the run. Just go nuts and just be our slash guy. If he slips all the way to 13, I think that's a great fit.
I was going
to
say, that'd be a pretty big fall for him, because he's been...
I found him around there, and I think that's where he goes. Look, Gregory is a good player. I just don't know if he's an every-down player. And if I go top five, top six for a guy like that, I'm not sure. So I think he's in the play. And then 32, you're going to have the Seahawks pick. You got to go another defensive back. I mean, I got to think that the Saints are always in need of a corner. I like Kevin Johnson out of Wake Forest. I like Quentin Rollins out of Miami, Ohio. But let's keep it. Let's keep Louisiana. Let's do that, and let's give you guys, what's his name? Jalen Collins, I think is his name, the LSU corner. Let's go with him. Big physical guy. I like that three guys. Jalen Collins, number 32, going to the Saints, and that's two solid defensive players. Let's play ball.
There you go, Saints fans. Of course, you know, selfishly, I'd love to see Devin Smith at 32, get that deep threat for the Saints offense. And maybe, you know, next year you draft Cardale Jones as Drew Brees' eventual successor. But we'll...
Yeah, but as an Ohio State fan, you're happy Cardale's going back to be the third-string quarterback, aren't you?
We'll see. We'll see how that all breaks down. But I think I kind of like hatching that plan, too, for 2016 and beyond. All right, this has been a lot of fun. Peter Schrager, I guess. You can follow him on Twitter, at PSchrags. Catch him pretty much... anytime, everywhere, Fox Sports 1 is on the air. There's a high likelihood that if Jay and Dan aren't on, Peter will be. So follow him throughout the NFL offseason, free agency, draft, 24/7, 365. Peter, thanks for being a good sport today. Best of luck throughout the rest of the offseason. Hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Matt, I wasn't blowing smoke up your ass. I think you guys do a good job, and I appreciate you having me on. It does mean a lot. Thank you.